All right, welcome to another episode of Talking Cloud. It's Friday afternoon.
Hello.
How are you?
Yep. I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. It's long weekend edition.
It is.
Hey, Kevin.
Oh, hey, Kevin.
Yeah, long weekend edition. Like we were talking about before, I kind of forgot that this was a long weekend. So surprise long weekends are always more fun than weekends that you've planned. Long weekend.
The best kind.
Yeah, the best kind. And let's see. I think last Friday it was 14 degrees. Today yeah. It's zero.
It's a little cooler. Yep. Back to normal.
Back to normal. Kevin, what's the temperature where you are? Let's see what Kevin's dealing with right now. It's like 25 degrees. He's on vacation somewhere, nice and warm. All right, let's pull
That'd
up.
Nice.
Yeah, let's pull up our presenter view here. And like I said to you, sort of as we got started, fingers crossed that I haven't.
Oh, that's worse.
Okay, Kevin, do you hear us now? Let's see. Let's make sure it's working. I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear you fine as well.
You can hear me. I think what it was...
okay, all good.
Okay, all right. I was telling the funniest jokes too right there, like killing it, and nobody heard. Okay, so what I was saying is last week we talked about the new CloudFormation importer feature. So
yeah.
I said, I'm going to test this out and see how it works because we had a few questions and stuff. So this week I just created through ClickOps a really simple VPC, single region, multi-AZ, couple NAT gateways, blah, blah, blah. And then what you do is the first thing you do is you run a scan job. And did you solve world hunger? Yeah, I did. And you run a scan job, and even in our simple little demo account, it came back with close to 600 resources. Then
okay.
What you have to do is you have to, if you know what you're looking for, you can search. So like,
okay.
I searched for VPC, it showed me nothing. But if I searched for EC2, what it's doing, if I remember this correctly, what it's doing is when it's running the scan job, it's actually defining for each of the resources it finds which type of CloudFormation resource it is. So to
okay.
find my VPC, I had to search for EC2 and then what is it? EC2 :: VPC.
Yes.
But anyways, there was a lot to look through. So you go through and you select the resources that you want to include.
Mm-hmm.
You can search for them. You can flip through the pages and then you continue on. And what it then does is it goes off and generates the template for you. Oh, one other thing that was really interesting. I'd clicked a couple things and it's smart enough to figure out for you or try to figure out for you if you've missed any dependencies. So like I selected all the VPC components I could find, right? The subnets, the route tables, the subnet associations, the flow log, the standard stuff that we would put in there.
Yeah.
And I missed the It was something to do with flow log. I can't remember what it was. But after I said, okay, that's all the stuff I wanted, another screen popped up and said, hey, we think these resources are also important. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah, there was something about the flow log. There was a couple other things. So I said, yeah, I'll just select those. And then next, and I got a CloudFormation template. Couple things that I noticed. And you and I talked about this last week. I'm assuming that this would be a non-trivial task to do this. Okay, so here's the things I noticed. No parameters.
Okay.
Everything in the template is hard-coded.
Gotcha.
I ran out of time. What I wanted to do was save the template and then pick the template up and just go to a different region and run it and see what would happen. Based on what I saw in there, I don't know if it would work or not. Like, it was even grabbing... like the EC2 instance that I had defined, it was grabbing the IP addresses. You know how you can assign an IP or just use DHCP. It was grabbing a configuration snapshot.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So
it's extremely granular down
very
to
granular. Yeah, very granular.
The bare bones of what your environment is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think it would do what you would want it to do, right? Like if you had an environment and you wanted to get a CloudFormation template out of it or a CDK template, it's going to do that. And there was a little thing there that said something, and I'm paraphrasing along the lines of, you know, check this kind of thing, like be careful with what you have here. And you might have to make some changes and stuff like that. But hey, it did what it said it was going to do out of the box. It gave me a template. Maybe later this afternoon or over the weekend, I'll run the actual template just to see what happens. Maybe dump it into a different account, dump it into a different region. But
yeah, I'd be curious. I'd imagine the resource-specific resources would fail, like AMIs, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? Even if you just want to migrate from something like Terraform to CloudFormation, this is a really quick way to do it.
It's going to do it, right? Yeah. And then if you wanted to, kind of what I was thinking is you could go through it. You'd still need to know about CloudFormation. Like you couldn't edit that template without knowing something about CloudFormation, right? So you could go through the template, create the parameters that make sense for you, remove the attributes that you don't want hard-coded the next time you run it, kind of thing. But if you were looking to take a snapshot of your environment and save that snapshot somewhere for safekeeping, it's going to replicate exactly what you had the moment you ran that import option. So I thought it was kind of slick.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this a try.
Yeah. The other thing it reminded me of is, you know, like if you're building like an API gateway, you can use like a Swagger file. You could use what's it called?
Oh, sure.
Open API outputs well. It almost kind of feels like that. Like you set your API gateway up. Everything's the way you want, and then you export the Swagger file, or you export the Open API file, and then you put that in your repo or something. Felt very similar to that.
Okay, and then you have like a standard template for what your environment should look like.
Yeah, if you ever had a catastrophic failure, then in theory you could run that template and get it back, right? You mentioned AMIs, and I regret now not looking at the AMI piece. I kind of just was whipping through the template really quickly. I'll have to check and see what it did with those.
Yeah, because that's one gotcha that comes to mind right away is those are all regional, right? So.
Yeah. So that kind of gets into other things. Like how would you... I haven't read enough about it. Like what's the intent of this thing? Is it just to give you the template, or is it to give you a template that you can use somewhere else? Because using that template somewhere else is probably a tough challenge, right?
Like involves a bit more legwork, for sure. There's definitely some updates that'll have to be made from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Well, but that's good.
Yeah, yeah, good. So that's the update. And let's get into the couple articles that we came across this week. So here's the first one. I stumbled across this early in the week. When's this from? February 7th? Wow, that's a long time ago. Amazon's cloud boss likens generative AI hype to the .com bubble. This is an interesting article. So I'll include this in the newsletter because I definitely think it's worth a read. But I kind of, let me zoom in a bit here. There we go. It's a little better, right? Easier to read. So you can see here, essentially what they're saying, what he said is, maybe AI, the hype on AI is, let me say it this way. He's kind of basically saying the hype around the companies that are in the Gen AI space right now is probably overblown, but the hype about Gen AI in general is not overblown. And the analogy that he uses is kind of back, you know, in the early days of the internet. Was the internet overhyped? No, but were those original early businesses in the .com?
Like pets.com. Yeah.
Were they overhyped? Absolutely. And I can kind of see his point, right? And we were just talking about this on a call the other day. Like, we were talking about the fact that, well, what happens to all of these little Gen AI startups that are building all these great pieces of software?
Right.
Once, if you run your entire business on Office 365, you run your entire business on Google.
The Google suite, yeah.
Once they have tools, why would you, like, if it were
like
me, I'd be more inclined just to use the tools that come with Office 365 or come with Google.
With your subscription,
somebody else. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it tiers up a price point or whatever, but I'm sure you'll get access to ChatGPT in your Microsoft suite and the new Google. I've immediately forgotten.
I don't know.
But that'll be in there too, right? Like,
every time I turn
it was
around,
Bard, and now it's
Gemini or Duet?
Gemini. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's every Gemini, time yeah. I don't get it. It, like, we'll talk about name changes in a second because it's one of the news releases here that we have. But yeah, I can't quite figure that out. Like, it's already very confusing, and people are trying to figure it out. And I can never remember what Google's calling what they have. It seems to change, or maybe it's different solutions and it's just confusing to keep it all straight. I don't know.
But yeah, like, a lot of those narrower use cases will get eaten up by those big general models, right? Of course, you're still always going to be able to find some sort of niche data processing, data analysis kind of areas where these smaller models will excel, right? Like, you can train to fit on whatever set of data you happen to need. Yeah. But for most people, for like the general generative AI tasks, I can't imagine you would want to go much further than ChatGPT or Gemini.
Yeah. Like,
so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it plays out, right? And especially to the earlier comment about if you're already paying for that service, or it's Office 365 or something else, and they've got those tools built in, sure, it's going to up your costs a little bit, but I would think most businesses would be more inclined to just say, well, I already have this. We could just extend the functionality and see if it fits our needs,
right,
rather than going out and trying to find individual point tools for specific things.
There's a lot of staying power there, right? It's very sticky.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I would think so. So here, that gets us to, let's move around a little bit. Did you see this? OpenAI's new Sora offering?
I did see this, and this is kind of insane.
Kind of, I think, is maybe underselling
it. It's quite insane,
it.
Actually. It's quite crazy. Yeah.
I was showing Karen this last night, and she's like, no, that's not, you can't write three sentences and have it generate. I was showing her the one where I think it's, they described it as people walking on a street in Japan, cherry blossoms, they're walking through the... And she's like, no, that, and I'm like, look, I realize this is marketing stuff, but this is supposedly what this does. Like, talk about the things that I think have a potential to dramatically change everything the way, you know what, I don't know what I'm
it's
trying
scary
to say,
good.
But scary good.
It's
yeah.
Scary
good.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's gonna be an interesting year with the election coming up and everything, right?
I looked very briefly at this because that was the very first thing Karen said to me. She's like, "Well, wouldn't this allow you to make videos about people, like real people and stuff?" Mm-hmm. I didn't like look at this.
So every video on this page was generated by the AI, right?
Yeah.
So this one was particularly striking to me, of the woman walking through downtown, what appears to be downtown Tokyo in a rainy street. The reflections are just incredible.
It's
mind-blowing. It seems to know how the light is supposed to behave in the scene, which is just blows my mind to see. And the sunglasses. There's a train one after this too.
Look at the quality, like the detail in her skin.
Yeah.
Like it's lifelike. It's not sort of what you see in a lot of video games where it's like everybody has that marble type skin and stuff. Like it's unbelievable.
Yeah, this close up shot you would never know, right?
No.
There's something weird going on with how she walks, but you wouldn't be paying attention to that anyways.
Well, okay, so that reminds me a little bit of the conversation we had yesterday about when I was making those short videos, and it has the I won't mention any particular products, but it has the AI tool to do eye tracking now. And I said when I tried it, if you sat and watched my eyes, it's weird, right?
Yes.
But if you were just listening to the video, I'm making eye contact with you now, even though I was reading a script that was just a little off center from the camera. So
yeah, this is one of those tools that automatically adjusts eye level to be at the camera height.
At the camera height, right? So pretty neat. But to your point, like if you're just sitting watching this, you're not going to probably notice those little odd things if you're just interested in watching the video, right?
Yeah, incredible. It's not perfect. Yeah, it's not perfect by any means, but it's just incredible.
Yeah.
There's some pretty funny bloopers down on the page too, but
Is there? I was looking for this piece right here, the safety piece.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of to your comment about election year and sort of what Karen said to me last night. I could only imagine what's happening behind the scenes to try to make sure that people don't misuse this thing.
They're going to have so many problems trying to lock this down.
Oh yeah.
And it's going to get used for some pretty nefarious things. And I don't know. Hopefully they can lock it down enough, because this is, it's extremely powerful to just be able to generate video with a paragraph. And
where were the bloopers?
They should have been on that page, on the capabilities page.
Capabilities page?
Oh, there's one right here. Like he's walking on the treadmill the wrong way, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. This one here. Yeah.
There's a dog just walking on the windowsill.
Here's the thing that I think about this stuff is this. I've got the treadmill one up right now. You know, camera motion, the whole bit's happening here.
Yeah.
If you think, like, what's it going to look like in a year? What's it going to look like in 6 months, right? As this continues to get better and better.
Right? This is going to let anyone make a movie.
Yeah. If it's in your head and you can properly describe it, you can start making these scenes, right? Something else. It's mind-blowing. Which kind of actually takes me back to this first article here about the generative AI hype. You know, I totally understand what they're saying here, but the other part of me was kind of like felt a little, and I don't know if I'm just misinterpreting this, but felt a little sour grapey. We're not the ones that thought of this, so a lot of this stuff's overhyped. Not the space in general, but these other things are overhyped. I don't know if I'm just being a little sour about it. I don't know.
We'll see, right? Like, I mean, there's some tech. There's a thing where for some use cases you get a little more leeway than others, and film is one of those, I think, because you'll have this thing in a lot of older media, like things filmed in the 80s, 90s, you'll have background actors that are doing something strange, but you don't notice it, right? It's not part of what you're paying attention to. So in film, you get a little more leeway. In stuff like coding and where you need more precision, that's going to be really tricky, because you need to be exactly right to get the program to run. So I don't know.
Sorry, you were mentioning the programming piece. I saw a thread on Twitter this morning. I should have screen capped it, and we could have included it here. And you never know, right? Like somebody could just be blowing smoke. But person's like, "Oh, I have a buddy who's not a programmer, and they're building a complete accounting system or something just by writing prompts." And I'm like, I bet your mileage is going to vary there, right? Like, do you want to build those kinds of things with no programming knowledge? I don't know. I think that's probably for the likes more than anything, or the salty commentary.
Hopefully you're not doing anything too exotic.
Yeah.
It's all
so that's Sora. Stuff, Yeah, that's Sora, pretty cool. Just because we're talking about AI, Gen AI and stuff, this one also came out. This is Amazon Science talking about a new model or model here. Yeah, Base TTS, which is text-to-speech.
Text-to-speech library, yeah.
If I remember the post I saw, I didn't download the whole thing, and I would assume that because this is on the Amazon Science page, to be honest, it's going to go like way, way over my head of understanding of how all this stuff works. But, you know, it says here that trained on 100,000 hours of public domain speech data, a billion parameter model. I guess it's the comment that I had seen somewhere was this is the largest text-to-speech model ever built up to this point. I don't really know much more about it. Like I said, I didn't download the paper and read it just because I thought it would be significantly past my understanding of it's kind of like reading the side effects of the prescription that you're having to. I'm like, I don't know what this stuff is. So I just thought this was interesting because we've been talking a lot about Gen AI, and just the size of this model was seems
pretty large. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if it's anything, I'm curious to see if it scales in the text-to-speech space like it does in a language space linearly with parameters and compute thrown at it. Because, you know, if you train, if you throw more power and more parameters at a large language model, it tends to just get better linearly. Mm. I'm curious if the same thing holds.
I'm not sure if you're looking at the page or not, but the one thing I'll put you on the spot, which I do every week, hopefully you're getting used to it by now, but they say here, echoing the widely reported, in quotes, emergent abilities of large language models when trained on increasing volumes of data.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what do they mean when, in quotes, they put emergent abilities? What does that mean?
So what they're talking about are abilities that they can't really trace back to any individual part of the system, but because of the way the system interacts and as it scales and gets larger and has more connections, these are properties that emerge. So that's what the emergent properties means. Okay. So they're not really, you can't really quantify them on like a node, like a micro level, but as the system scales, they get better or they appear.
Okay.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, it seems like the more you feed these models, the better the worldview they have. Like they can, I don't want to say conceive, but it's kind of what I'm thinking here. They have a better worldview with more data, it seems like.
Okay. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question, and this might just be, again, you know, I'm just kind of starting down these paths. You kind of know how I've felt about this Gen AI stuff for a long time. We've had lots of conversations. Yeah. I'm slowly getting converted here as we have more of these weekly things, and it's more and more
keeps
every time
up.
You turn around, it keeps coming up. So if we go back to the Sora thing, right? Like, it doesn't matter which video we look at. So I'm looking at a Jeep driving here, and it says the prompt is the camera follows behind a white vintage SUV with a black roof as it speeds up a steep dirt, blah, 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 blah. Is this idea of emergent capabilities or abilities meaning like we don't quite understand how it took the prompt and like in the model decided to make this particular video, but it does it? Is that what that means? Or am I thinking about
Correct.
It the wrong way?
Kind of, yeah. So like, the ability to translate those tokens that you're passing through it, because you're not just passing individual words, it breaks those down into tokens and assigns, figures out the meaning, and then over the training period figures out better and better ways to defuzz the noise that it's using to generate these images, right, these frames. Okay. So again, it has a better picture of what you're asking for, basically, and how the world should be working in these photos. Yeah. Another funny example from about a year ago was someone asked an AI to generate a video of Will Smith eating spaghetti.
Oh, I saw this. I saw it because
it's horrifying.
Of all the it was slightly scary, right?
And, it's nightmare and, fuel, right?
Yeah, and the commenter was mentioning like look at what happened a year ago compared to they were talking about the Sora stuff here, like just how far it's come in a year. So to your
it's
point,
crazy,
if you haven't seen the Will Smith eating spaghetti AI video. You should definitely check it out. But yeah, it's interesting, let's say, right?
Yeah. So yeah. It seems that with more resources, more parameters, you can, and better training sets, you can kind of fine tune the model to behave in the way that you want, right? Which is kind of what you'd expect from this kind of system.
Okay, perfect. All right. So that is base TTS. And since we're still talking about Gen AI, I'm going to flip over a couple more lines here, or a couple more tabs. Tell us about this one. This is, I've got the Microsoft and OpenAI say they're watching bad actors. Tell us a little bit about this one.
So what was funny about, what I thought was funny about this was how the bad actors are using these services. But to give you a little context, Microsoft and OpenAI are blocking known bad actor, or if they detect bad actors on their platforms, they're blocking them from using ChatGPT to generate text or code or whatever. Yeah. But they're using it just like you or I would. writing email.
As soon as you said that, I'm like, I hope that's where you're going, because I've got the paragraph here, blah, 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 are using tools to improve their productivity, streamlining and accelerating their work, but they have yet to unleash the technology's full potential. So just like all of us.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So they're writing emails or blog posts or whatever, right? And doing some light coding, which is kind of funny, but it just goes to show that this technology is, it's available to everyone, right?
Yeah. So, you know what worries me about this is, you know, social media in general continues to get, the bad press that it rightly deserves on, we can't manage these environments right now against things that I would say people shouldn't be doing, or we decide as a society isn't appropriate. And now it seems like we're turning it up to 11. Like, if you can't do the social media platforms as it is right now, how do we expect these platforms to not end up in the same situation where they're just used for things that we deem inappropriate?
Yeah, and it was already impossible, essentially, to combat disinformation on these platforms, right? Yeah. Now Sora's out. Good luck, I guess. Anything you see on the internet now is suspect, right?
Yeah.
If it wasn't already before. So you should have your filters up for that.
Yeah, I guess it's what's the saying? Trust but verify. Yeah. Right? Like you
it's mostly
you,
just verify at this
point. It's just verify. You just really can't believe anything that you see anymore looking at these kinds of things. Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. All right, so that's enough Gen AI talk. It's going to go nowhere. All right, so let's change gears and let's have a look at, I'm going to do this one first. Let's have a look at some AWS updates from the week. Mm. This is my favorite update from the whole week. And I'll tell you why.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's these kind of things really bug me. I know they shouldn't, right? I got other things to worry about. It harkens back to the time I worked for a very large company, and they would routinely change the names of the products. And you talk to the customer, and they're like, "Oh, okay, well, what new features does it have?" And you're like, "Well, nothing." "Oh, okay, so you know, how do I talk to it?" "Well, the same way you were talking to it before." And they're like, "Then why did you change the name?" And you're like, "Well, I don't know." It kind of feels like that, like. Okay, we're not going to call it Kinesis Data Firehose anymore. We're just going to call it Amazon Data Firehose.
Right.
And you've seen here, no difference in APIs, basically no difference whatsoever.
No changes,
we're just going to change the name.
It seems.
Yeah. Yep. And I get it, right? I know there's whole teams of people that figure out how to brand these things and how to talk about them. And I'm sure it makes sense somewhere. But if I put my customer hat on, to me, in a platform that's as large as AWS and as dynamic as AWS, if you change the name of something, it's just making it harder for people to understand what it is they're supposed to be using. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was my take on this.
So what did they actually do? Do they move data streams into a nested kind of service like they did with some of the old DPC access analyzer services?
It's kind of hard to tell, because like Data Firehose is just Kinesis Data Firehose, right? You can see they describe it the same way. You can reduce the complexity of maintaining streaming data delivery pipelines. That's what Kinesis Data Firehose did. Maybe they're just moving some of the pieces around. Like Kinesis is, like, when people think about Kinesis, like when I'm training, running training classes and stuff, people think about Kinesis as real-time data processing. Firehose was never that. It was a near real-time because it buffered up the changes and then batch processed or batch load them somewhere else. So maybe that's the thought process behind it. Like maybe they want to move it away from the brand of Kinesis because it's not real time. I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe. Yeah. I just find these kinds of things, like I said, on a big platform that changes so much, it just, it ends up confusing people. Like, what is this, right?
It'll be confusing for the first little while. I think probably what they found was they did some UI UX testing after some surveys of customers, and people were like, why is there a data stream and a fire hose? What's the difference? That kind of thing. So
Yeah, makes sense. I'm sure we'll get used to it. Yeah. Oh yeah. This one, this is not,
but it is annoying.
It is annoying. Yeah. I'm traumatized from all the times in the past where I had to keep explaining, no, that's the same as this. We just, and so it just brought up those old feelings of dread where I was like, oh no, please don't do a lot of this. I don't want to spend all my time just telling you it's the same service, just with a new name. So this is a good one. Control Tower introducing APIs to register organizational units. So now we can manage Control Tower at the OU level versus just the individual account level. That's kind of what I took from this.
And programmatically too.
Programmatically, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know how Control Tower has versions and you've got to update your, what do they call it? You update your landing zone?
Do you think you could write a script to run those updates?
I don't know. Like I'm looking here at, it looks like they've got sort of that, a list of what they're supporting out of the gate with these new things, right? Mm. They also include CloudFormation support, so you can write this all in your favorite infrastructure as code templating tool, also known as CloudFormation. I just, whenever I see this, I know increasingly we've got more and more customers that build on top of Control Tower. Like Control Tower, for customers that are just getting started, seems to be the de facto sort of, this is how you get started.
Seems like the standard for setting up an org at the moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, different situation if you've gone out and built it without Control Tower, how do you kind of retroactively put Control Tower in? I think that's a whole different conversation, but these always catch my eye just because of the amount of Control Tower work that seems to come along and how people are using it as a starting point. So whenever you start introducing these additional features and stuff, it always catches my attention.
That's good. I did see they integrate it with Terraform too. So
yeah, they've got, I forget what it's called. So you can pick your tool of choice, which is always nice, right? Yeah. Yeah. Very good. So there's that one. Firehose. Since I've messed myself up now, cause I'm like, I've been jumping between tabs. Let's go over here. We'll do one more AWS announcement. GuardDuty.
All right. Oh, this, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll admit, I didn't realize with GuardDuty and the malware protection that if I'm understanding this one correctly, if you had an EBS volume associated with an EC2 instance and you wanted to enable malware protection, if it was using an AWS managed encryption key, it wasn't supported. It was only supported if you had, and I'm hoping I'm reading this right, because I just looked in the first thing here, right? It says, in addition to unencrypted EBS volumes and volumes encrypted with CMKs, customer managed keys, you can now scan EBS volumes that are encrypted with EBS managed keys. So I guess in the past it didn't do that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, to be honest. I think we've had a few customers sort of looking at this as a potentially something option they wanted to turn on, but I don't think we actually have anybody running it, do we?
Not that I know of, no. Yeah.
But we have lots of people running GuardDuty, but not this protection plan with it. Yeah.
Specifically for scanning your EC2 instances, which is also relatively recent, I think, as an offering.
But I think so, yeah.
A couple years, anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is good. We should be able to scan everything if it's part of the service, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what this feature is worth. Like, you know, I know Guard Duty will give you a certain amount of usage every month for free. And then you've got a whole bunch of different protection plans you can add to it, right? Like there's S3, right. There's EKS, there's this one. There's maybe about six of them now. I just wonder sort of how does that affect the overall cost of your Guard Duty implementation? But much like I mentioned on Control Tower, for me, and when we're building out systems for customers, Guard Duty is like...
It's
part of our deployment plan from the very beginning, gets integrated into some sort of alerting system, and it's there. This is just another way to add some additional protection in your environment and give you some more insight into what's happening.
Yeah, we have people using the container scanning, I'm pretty sure.
Container scanning, lots of S3 protection. Oh, what's the other one? There's RDS in here now as well, and there's, Lambda.
Yes.
Yeah, Lambda's there as well. So lots of good stuff there. And then I think we've got one tab to go. I think it's this tab. How cheap is AWS Graviton 2?
Oh, yeah. So I came across this when I was just looking for things for the show, and this caught my eye. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What's the cost savings for switching from 86 to ARM on AWS?
And do I select from 20, 40, 50, or 60?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see. I'll put my fanboy hat on and say it's 60.
No, unfortunately. But you could get up to 60% in AP Asia Pacific South.
So it's going to depend on the region that you're running Graviton processors
right.
in.
So because of the costing differentials in EC2 across the regions, you get a variation in savings by switching to Graviton. And apparently it is 60%. I think if you scroll down a little
workloads. Savings by migrating to Graviton in each region. So most of our customers are running in CA Central 1 or look at CA. Oh, these are all roughly 20. So US. Still 20% savings for changing the underlying architecture.
If you can use an ARM chip, then you should. It's basically the lesson here.
Yeah.
Because you'll save 20-25% depending on where you are. But you can run in Asia Pacific, and if you're not super dependent on looking for what you're doing, you might be able to save a little more.
Save switch up to Graviton. Up to 50%.
Yeah.
Now that is actually that number is
kind of compelling.
Shocking. Like, oh man. We've been talking a lot about how my brain's been reprogrammed with different phrases because we've been Karen and I have been binge watching Letterkenny. Whenever I say shocking, I think of Elf. Isn't it from Elf?
Nice.
He's like something.
Yes.
About, yeah. It's shocking. I can't help myself. Oh, man. The thing that always catches me with this is, and you said it, if you can run on an ARM processor,
right? That's the gotcha.
I think the thing that people overlook. Like you just look at this and go, you know, forget running in AP Southeast South 1 or South 2. But somebody turns around and goes, well, I could save 20% in the current region. Why am I not just running it ARM processors right now, right? Graviton processors. Well, there's a bunch of other things involved here, right? Can you actually do what you want to do on those ARM processors?
Your workload may not support it.
Yeah.
If you're on Windows. I know there's some Windows ARM distributions, I think, but for the most part, you can't.
Yeah. We've even run into this a couple times in non-Windows-based environments with particular libraries and stuff like that. So it's a Linux operating system, no problem, but then we've got a dev trying to do something on top of it and a package that they need or a library that they need, it's not supported. So
it's
then
not
you're
supported
like,
on ARM. Yeah.
So there's some upfront work that you should be doing here before just saying we're going to use ARM processors going forward. But to your point, if you can run an ARM processor, you're saving dollars right out of the gate without having to really do much other than your homework to make sure it's supported.
Yeah, it just makes sense. And I mean, this is specifically for EC2. I don't think the cost savings are echoed across most other compute services, although I think Fargate might be the exception. But
what about Lambda? Because I know what I do now for Lambda, but I'm thinking more about the sort of the benefits of performance, right? So My brain, if I'm thinking, if I'm going to build out Lambda functions and what I'm doing is supported using an ARM-based processor like Graviton, my default now is just to use Graviton with Lambda. But I don't know, the cost savings are probably minimal versus the potential improvement in performance. I don't know.
Right. I guess it depends. As always, it depends on your application, right? If you can support it and run it. But you'd have to get up to pretty high Lambda usage for it
to make any real difference, right?
But once you get to that point, it's worth considering.
Yeah. And even if it's giving you a little bit of a performance boost and you're not running those Lambda functions like tens of millions of times a month kind of thing, right? It's a smaller environment. Just getting the slight performance boost, forget the potential cost savings, but I know a lot of times you'll read the articles about x86 versus the Graviton processor. You're just going to get better performance. So if it's possible, why not use it?
Yeah, like if your workload needs to be pretty compute heavy, like CPU heavy workload, workloads will benefit from that the most. Yeah. If your workload is memory dependent, then you're going to pay either way, right?
Yeah, not going to make much of a difference, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm looking across the top of the tabs there. I'm just checking that we didn't miss anything since I decided to jump all over the place. But that is it, I think.
All right.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your long weekend. We'll be back next week. Let's do shameless plug time here as we end the week. We will be back Tuesday night. I skipped this Tuesday. I was just being lazy and sat on the couch. Shame on me. We'll be back next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. We're going to continue to work on our own Gen AI solution using Amazon Q for Business. I kind of got it to work, but something's not quite right yet. So maybe I'll pick your brain on it before Tuesday, maybe. Sure. So we're back on Tuesday night. Yesterday, we did an intro to Identity and Access Management webinar. I'm working on cutting out all the dumb things I said during that and getting something that is ready to put on YouTube. So that'll be there. And then obviously, we'll be back on Friday for another edition of Talking Cloud. So until then, folks, we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.